We all know the Hollywood image of the Indian. Movies and TV shows have traditionally leaned into stereotypes. They've portrayed Indigenous Americans as one-dimensional characters, usually ruthless killers that cowboys needed to vanquish. But the new season of the HBO series True Detective is different. It employed Alaska Native actors, writers, and casting directors. What changes when Indigenous people have influence over popular television content? We'll talk with actors from the Alaska-focused series True Detective Night Country today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Yes, indeed, where do we go? It's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. If you recognize that kind of creepy little theme snippet, then you've seen True Detective Night Country. Movies and TV shows have often portrayed people of color and Indigenous Americans as dangerous, unpredictable, and not in charge of anything. Certainly not a reflection of their true lives. Although Hollywood folks like to see themselves as progressive, these tired tropes were standard fare for far too long. I'm sure our guests today would say there's still plenty of work to do to accurately reflect Native people in popular media, but maybe we're witnessing the start of something new. For example, the PBS program Molly of Denali. It's an animated program about Alaska Native culture written and acted by Alaska Native people. Now, the fourth season of the HBO blockbuster series True Detective is about Alaska and features Alaska Native people. Okay, it wasn't filmed in Alaska, but hey, at least real Alaskans are in it, and some of them are here with us today. Mary Lou Asiksik helped cast the series, and she also acted in it. And in the interest of full disclosure, Mary Lou also works at Alaska Public Media, so I get to see star power daily. And also in the studio today is Philip Blanchette. Philip is the lead singer and one of the founders of the internationally renowned Alaska band Pamua. Philip also acted in Night Country. Yari Walker is also in the studio with us today. Yari helped advise and acted in the new series. And Diane Benson is on the line from Petersburg. Diane has led a varied life. She's been a dog musher, ice road trucker, and a Democratic nominee for lieutenant governor. She's also written and acted on stage and in film for many years. Welcome, all of you. It's so awesome to have you here with us today.
Thank you.
You can also join us, Alaskans. Have you seen the series? Do you have questions about how it all came together? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Okay, here's the really big question. Philip and Diane, was it executive producer Matthew McConaughey or Woody Harrelson who called you up to say you had the parts? Did you guys see these folks at all during the production?
No.
I didn't.
No. I was really hoping to see one of them at the premiere, but we didn't. Neither of them showed up.
Oh, that's disappointing.
We didn't get to see Jodie Foster, so that's something.
Yeah, and Leslie Jones apparently is a huge fan of the show, and she was there.
Oh, wow, that's fun. Diane, you've been in this work for decades. You've performed on stage many times. Is this production a sign of change in the entertainment industry? And where are the places that really need work when it comes to how Native people are portrayed in film?
I think we've been leading up to this for some time. I don't know if you remember Fine Up Reardon's Freeze Frame book, which is great coverage of the history of Alaska, well, particularly Inuit or Eskimo people, as the book is called, Eskimo Freeze Frame. But it's been changing. And it's been a lot of hard work by a lot of people. I mean, Ted Mala's father, I think it was a star way back when. And there was a lot of realism. Hollywood has gone through ups and downs with presentation of Indigenous peoples. And it was really around World War II, or maybe just before all of that, that it started to really dive into these stereotypical images of Native peoples. So we've had highs and lows on that imagery and on the stories. But what's really different right now is the inclusivity of Native people, Alaska Native peoples, in every aspect of filmmaking. And it was bound to come. You know, when I first started doing theater, I was the only Native in the entire program and continued to be. Then Jeannie Green came along, and then Anna Smith, and well, she came into not the theater, but into to just the writing, creative writing. So here we had very limited number of people. The only actor at that time, and this was back in late 70s, early 80s, was Gary Wade, who was Tlingit, and he was performing in theater and got some attention, which caught my attention, like, yay, there's one of us from my tribe. And then there was Alutik, Jane Lind, who was actually, I think, an opera singer. But these were stage people, but that's how few they were. Mm. And I kept every clipping of anybody who did anything because I liked seeing us being represented. And so this is really a transformation and a lot of hard work on the parts of many of us insisting on more presentation. And I would put on plays even on the street to get attention to the fact that we exist and we are more than just dancing, you know, mm-hmm. And things like that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for getting us started here. Mary Lou, I'm interested in how the cast was decided. You helped out. You work for Alaska Talent. What was the process and how much say did Alaskans really have over who played the Alaskans?
Well, in terms of who has the most say, it's ultimately up to the director. That's who makes the final decision. I work with Alaska Talent, and we don't have as much say. We present, and that's what we are hired to do. But in terms of casting, what we really looked for was, and we scouted, and we sent out casting calls throughout Alaska, eventually through Canada, Greenland. So we went, you know, all over looking for Indigenous actors, and then scouted in places like Nome and Kotzebue, where actually the show where Annis Alaska is based on is pretty much Nome and Kotzebue. So that's what we were looking for. We were looking for authenticity. We were looking for people who could really portray the area that I grew up in, which is I grew up in Shaktuluk around Nome. And so that's what we were looking for.
For all of you, I have always appreciated Jodie Foster's acting skill. And wow, her character was really unlikable, especially early in the series. What was it like to work with a big name Hollywood person? Was she right in the mix, or do people like, you know, bigger name actors just kind of come in, do their thing, and then they're like in this little cone of you can't get near me?
I really liked her. When I first met her, she was very humble and down to earth. You know, when we got together in right before shooting one of the scenes with the aunties, I believe, at first I was starstruck, and then I told myself, she's human just like me. And so it was nice to be around her, talk to her. I gave her a tour here in Alaska, and I really like how humble she is and how down to earth she is. So I enjoyed being around her.
That's great to hear. I see you nodding, Mary Lou. You had the same experience?
I did. I felt like she listened a lot. She was very humble. I was very excited to work with her in my one scene, but at the same time, I felt actually very comfortable, which is really nice. And I was on the tour that Yari gave at the Heritage Center to with Jody and Callie, and it was wonderful to see them, you know, as people and get to know them, because that's all everybody we all are people. You know, we all have the same. We get scared, we get happy. It was wonderful to meet her. I will say that the only two times I've ever been starstruck in my life are meeting Wes Studi, because he's Alaska, you know, he's Native American, and right. I was so excited. But the other one is Diane Benson. Mm. I was, when I first met her and first saw her, because I'd seen her do plays and things like that. And as a little kid, I envisioned being an actor, and I wanted to be an actor. And she was one of the people, you know, Alaska Native that, you know, I could look up to. And like she said, she's, for a long time, was sometimes the only person. So I'm, you know, Diane and I got to know her in Iceland. And so that's, you know, all of us, you know, Jody and Diane and Phil and Yari and everybody else, we got to know each other as people.
Well, that is such a beautiful tribute to Diane's work. And it also is such an important reminder of what's needed for people to get those pathways into other areas that, you know, Native people and people of color have not traditionally been in any great numbers or have any kind of authority in those spaces. But when you see people that look like you doing things, it opens up doorways that otherwise might not even be considered. So
absolutely,
that's so wonderful to hear. Yari, you said that you liked that the show took on the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, and that's what attracted you to the project. Tell us about the response that you've had since then on social media.
Wow, people have said thank you for the representation of MMIWG, Indigenous women. I thought a lot about my own daughter. I have a 15-year-old daughter, and I also have a foster daughter. And my daughter was a lot on my mind because I do everything in my power to protect my daughter and to educate her about MMIWG and human trafficking. Showed her actual documentary films to show her these are real issues and you are a target because you are an Indigenous girl. So representing our daughters, our aunts, our grandmothers, our mothers, our cousins, it was so powerful and moving to me. It brought me to tears. Mm-hmm. I was in tears, especially when I watched the last episode. It was just so powerful. I it's hard for me to describe it, but it was a feeling that was deep within.
That is so amazing to hear that. When you think back on looking at popular culture, popular media, and how different it was 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, probably, compared to your experience with this, that is really, that's profound. Thank you for sharing that story. I want to remind our listeners that if you're just tuning in, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're talking about True Detective Night Country, the HBO blockbuster series that is just released its fourth season, and Alaskans are in it. Mary Lou Asiksik worked in casting for the series and also acted in it, also works for Alaska Public Media. Diane Benson is an actor of stage and film for many decades and is on the line with us. Philip Blanchett is a series actor and Alaskan musician with Bumua. And Yari Walker is also a series actor and advisor. You can join our conversation if you have questions or comments about the series. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So for all of you, and Diane, why don't you start us off? Did you get to see the full storyline in advance, or did writers sort of release it in segments as they were finishing it?
Everything they had at that point, I got to read up front, particularly because of the role of my character, and I'm in several scenes, critical, as one would discover by the end of the film. I don't want to be a spoiler to anybody who hasn't seen it yet.
Right.
But it was also changing, which is not unusual. And that's the frustration with film. I love stage because the script is the script and it doesn't change unless you wrote it and you want to change it. But in film, it doesn't change or it changes constantly. And it might change while you're delivering the line. And then they'll say, well, could you try it this way? And it's like, ah. So it's a very different kind of animal. I really enjoyed Iceland and the people, and what a difference between there and here in so many ways. And I know you were talking about Jody, and she's, of course, we were closer together in age than a lot of the rest, a lot of the people on the set. We instantly connected. Not everybody in Hollywood is like that. However, there's really nice people who aren't superficial at all. And she's a very confident performer, as she should be. She's amazing.
Yeah.
But I think they also in turn were fascinated and you know, had their own little anxiousness about working with Indigenous people on a really sensitive kind of story. Mm. So they were very respectful in approaching us on that. Now, I'd like to say that was the case with everyone, but, you know, that's you bring a lot of people together and you're going to have all different kinds of personalities.
Sure, yeah. So progress, but there's still work to be done, clearly. Philip,
well, there is, especially on the subject, I'm sorry, of violence against Indigenous yes. women, and that's maybe something we'll talk about here shortly.
Yes, absolutely. Philip, you said, and maybe right now, you said you saw this as more of an Arctic Indigenous story versus just an Alaskan story. So talk about that. What Pan-Arctic themes do you see in it?
Well, you know, just with the casting, I think a lot was because of they were filming in Iceland, just for proximity and the talent, they were looking, you know, for talent, not just in Alaska, but throughout the Arctic. And there's extremely talented actors and in Greenland and Canada, and it's reflected in the show, in the series. And, you know, although I think, you know, since it was a fictional community, there was a lot of liberty for the showrunner to be able to create the environment that she wanted to tell her story, but at the same time wanted to respect, you know, the nature of the culture and that authenticity necessary to get the emotions across. And that wasn't a documentary about, you know, what may exist as a, you know, thought of Kotzebue and Nome and what that place would be like. It was more of creating this platform for the story. And I think that they basically used talents from all over the Arctic, and that's reflected. And so the artists that were representing, that were from Greenland, I felt like the spirit of what they brought, the culture of what they brought, was respected, just like the Alaskans were, even though it was an Alaskan story. And it was the same with the Canadian actors. And it was you know, I can speak for myself as an Indigenous person, but when we travel to other Indigenous communities, there's a camaraderie and a kinship that is appreciated immediately, even before you even say anything. And so that spirit of identity was strong, and it was honored by, you know, everybody that was there, all the Indigenous people. But I think really what created it was from the showrunner herself, Issa, and, you know, creating and making sure that was vitally important to honor the not just the Alaskan Indigenous, but all of the Indigenous actors. And that created a real great environment to show the spirit of this pan-Arctic community. And because we all in the Arctic, as Inuit people, we have so much in common, but we have, our histories are very different from, you can hear it in the accent of Greenlanders, you know, and it was fun hearing them speak in an American accent and the Canadian accents. You might notice some of the accents, you know, in the show, But that's a small in comparison to the fact that the spirit of what everybody brought was what I think really what people feel in the success of the show.
And as we know, there's an enormous number of people that we never see during a production like this. You see actors on the scene, but there's a huge crew that is helping pull this off. Was the overall crew, was it more Indigenous folks than, I mean, were the white folks that were involved in this sort of the minority in this setting? Minority numbers?
It was a very international production.
Okay.
Go ahead, Diane.
The production itself was made in Iceland, and that's another subject as well, because of the lack of tax credits in the state of Alaska. But so a lot of their hiring was of Icelanders who worked all different aspects of the set, and there's people that came from other parts of the globe. And that's the film industry in this day and age. And if a director likes a particular person in one of the higher positions, and that's who they're going to work with, mm-hmm. regardless of where they come from. So it was really like an international gathering of people on this particular project. You get over 200 people in working on aspects of that on a daily basis, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, in the sets, the drivers, the cooks, everything. And they were fantastic. So there, where we were visible, was the producers, because we had two producers, the obviously on screen, which was the emphasis, and then some costumes and other work. So there were people who were hired from Alaska that did things. We ran into each other and it was such a surprise, you know, because we didn't know each other. We were all on the set.
That's fantastic.
But it's like a little town out there. It's bigger than some of our villages, I think, being on a set like that.
1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide if you'd like to join our conversation today about the HBO series True Detective Night Country, which is... features Alaska, wasn't filmed in Alaska, but does feature Alaska. And most certainly the most important part is Alaskans were represented. Alaska Native people were in the cast, and we have four members of that cast with us today. Mary Lou Asiksik, Diane Benson, Philip Blanchett, and Yari Walker all are Alaska Native folks and have been in this production and helped in various ways. Philip, in an earlier interview, you mentioned that many Alaskans on the road system may not know any more about rural Alaska life than someone from the lower 48. Talk about the importance of this big production, bringing rural lives to a major television audience.
Yeah, there's a lot of... disconnect that fuels a lot of the work that I know that we do as actors and as, you know, within the community, with Mary Lou, Diane, Yari, we've all worked together over the years. I know we all worked at the Heritage Center together, but we do a lot of sharing and I would say sharing. It's a big part of our cultural value is to share. And there's a lot of disconnect in the larger populations of America that don't really understand, for many different reasons, about what life is like in other cultures, particularly in Indigenous regions in rural Alaska. And so storytelling is definitely a big part of how information is traditionally shared. And so, something like this, HBO is what is an amazing platform to be able to share stories and tell stories that communicate real things that connect with us as humans and as people. And so I thought that it was really fun to see a story, to be a part of a story that is carrying on that tradition, but also carrying on some of the mystical aspects of storytelling that's very common where I'm from, as far as scary stories and things that... the way that we inform each other, and not everything is Even for children, not everything is just, you know, elementary. It's just like these are real life situations, and you can see the beauty in that. And for me, one of the my favorite scene in the series was the birthing scene. And I felt like, you know, I was just so touched by that, and I was in tears, and I was just so proud of the actors that were acting in that scene. And it just, to me, that was a depiction of life, death, you know, everything, you know, so much, right, of what we experience, what we know coming from where we're from, the joy in the miracle of just experiencing together in community. It's amazing. And I would just encourage people who haven't seen it to watch the series just for that one scene alone, because it just shows so much of the strength and power of our Indigenous women and the role that they have in the community and all the emotions that were brought in that. I was like, man, Issa, holy smokes, and all of the actors in it. That was it for me.
That's such a wonderful example of, you know, when television and movies are really work and are really magical, you're like transported to a place maybe that you've never seen before, maybe that you're familiar with, but maybe you've never seen before, but you get to experience an intimacy that is rare and can be very profound, as you just relayed, a very profound experience and an educational experience about the strength and resilience of people. And that can go a long way. How much influence did Alaskans have on set design, the interior and exterior of homes, interactions among people in the village? Clearly didn't have influence over where it was shot, but how about the other elements?
Well, in being part of the background in casting, I know that what happened was people from HBO actually went to different places in Alaska and took pictures and things like that. And so with set design, and there were certain scenes that were actually filmed, I believe, in Nome that were shown in the series. So it's kind of a mix of things. There was a lot done there. There were tons of pictures that people would take and have plastered all over their walls to try to create that authenticity. And they looked on the internet, but they did actually go out to different communities to try to make that as, you know, representative as possible.
And did any of you sort of advise them, or did they ask for feedback about, you know, does this seem right?
I remember in the scene where the women got together after the baby passed away, we got together. But before we started acting in the scene, I suggested to Issa, I mentioned to her that in our Native community, we like to do like an opening prayer or a song. So I mentioned that to her, and she allowed me to sing, to do an opening of in the very beginning before we started acting. So I was able to sing a song and share with everybody in the room. And it felt very right to me. It made me feel like my grandparents were there, my ancestors were there, everybody's ancestors were in the room with us. It just felt so right when we did that, the opening song. And I'm so glad that Issa, you know, listened and she understood what I was saying, so she allowed me to do an opening song.
That is fantastic. And on that note, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the importance of real representation in popular culture of Alaska Native people as Talk of Alaska continues statewide. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Today, we are discussing the recently released HBO series True Detective Night Country, that is all about Alaska and the Arctic. We have guests in the studio today that were part of the cast and also worked in casting. Mary Lou Asiksik worked with HBO in helping to cast for the series and also acted in it. Mary Lou also works for Alaska Public Media. Diane Benson is on the line from Petersburg, and Diane is an actor of stage and film for many decades and was part of True Detective. Philip Blanchett is an actor in the series and also a well-known Alaskan musician with the band Bumua. And Yari Walker is also in the studio with us today. Yari is a series actor and also helped bring a lot of authenticity to this production. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call statewide. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So for all of you, Hollywood isn't real. That might shock some, but it's true. So how tough was it to still push for authenticity in the way things looked, how people talked to each other? Were there some areas that you thought still maybe needed some work? It sounds like a lot was really fairly open and accepted by the director and writer, which is fantastic. But overall, were there areas that maybe you felt like were still needing some work as far as authentic representation?
Well, there was a scene where the female actors were holding rifles, and it actually caused me to have a trigger. Because there's been so many suicides in my community over my lifetime. And one day I decided to write all the names of the people who committed suicide my lifetime alone. And when I got to 30 names, I stopped because I couldn't go anymore. And so I was triggered by the rifles when we came into practice. So I told Issa and the other people that were working there, and they listened. They listened. It was amazing to me that they brought in counselors, and these counselors were on standby for us, for those of us who were triggered by some of these scenes. So it was very meaningful to me, and I'm sure for others, you know, who felt triggered by the rifles. I didn't expect that, but it really did. It bothered me a lot. So it felt good to know that we had counselors on standby in case we needed them.
That is so extraordinary. And I'm just wondering about the why and how that even came together, that there was that recognition that this might be needed. And I mean, what do I know about Hollywood? But I just have this image in my mind that in the past, directors would be like, whatever, just do your thing and, you know, get out of my way and just be tyrants and bullies. Maybe that's just my, you know, my own Hollywood version of how scenes have normally gone down. But it sounds like there was an extraordinary amount. Yes. Thank you, Diane, because it sounds like there was an extraordinary amount of cultural consideration. And really,
Issa and I had talked about it, the director, and had agreed, because I wanted to know, would I be able to gather us women, particularly because of a scene that was coming up. And so we discussed it. First, she wanted to be able to just talk to everybody first. And then it just sort of happened organically because we needed to. There were tough things. There was tough things for us to deal with. And we each have our own story, you know. And so and experiences. So at one point, do you remember, Yari, and we gathered at the tent? I kind of rounded up people and asked people to come together. And we did it on our own at that one point in our dressing tent. And it was really powerful and important. It certainly meant a lot to me to have us gather beforehand, because there were things that were not going to be easy. We all have our, like I say, our own experiences and our own difficulties with violence. And for me, it was, you know, what the things these men had been doing, and now we're going to be face to face with them. And I, as far as the guns go, that was probably the only time I really felt like there were a few times I just felt like my little old self, grab a gun and go. But it was, so they didn't, I really appreciated their concern for safety, but also the well-being and safety of us who had, as Yari said, triggers from all of our own experiences. And it's hard where we have so many deaths in our communities. I totally understand what she's saying, because it's true for me. Sometimes I say, how many are left? You know, I get tired of that, like decade after decade, how many are left now? And from one thing or another. And that's, we have a heck of a lot of work, but part of that involves breaking silence on many of these issues. And that's part of the major attraction for me to this True Detective series. Yeah, it's fictional, and it's, and some of it's kind of outrageous, but on the other hand, it's very scary, but it's also it hits a very central theme in our lives that shouldn't have to be there. And that's the threat to innocent people, to women and children in particular. But, and we've been trying to raise awareness on this forever. And this, for me, was cathartic. I am a survivor of multiple attacks. I'm very sensitive to this subject. Having to survive not just one or two incidents, but being left for dead, you know, all of these horrific things. And for the longest time, not being able to even speak about it. It's not polite. It's not what we want to hear. We don't want to talk about it. We pretend it didn't happen. We don't go after the perpetrators. In fact, we still don't go after the perpetrators of rape. We focus a lot now on violence in the more permanent type, like murder, missing. But we've got to come back and really spend some time attending to the fact that every day children are being molested, every day, and that somebody is being raped somewhere every day. And this, we've got to bring these people to justice. We've got to provide for those that cannot speak, and you know, to this. And that's been, in one sense, my life mission and why I created a course on violence against Indigenous women. And when I retired from teaching for Alaska Native Studies with the University of Alaska, I was proud that I had put time in to sharing courses like that and creating other ways for, and that was my, you know, to bring awareness. And that's one of my attractions to this particular film, was that,
that focus.
I would get, and then to end up with the role I got was quite something, because I was in my glory. At least if it's only pretend, I got to feel a sense of justice. Mm-hmm. And I heard them use the phrase leader of the justice ladies. And I thought, Yari and Mary Lou, you're the justice lady.
You know,
wonderful folks from Greenland.
Thank you so much, Yari and Diane, for being so open about your experience. And it really helps. Not only does the series help educate, but what you're talking about right now is another layer of education, mm-hmm. to better understand that this wasn't easy. You know, I went into this thinking, wow, must have been really fun, mm-hmm. not thinking about, of course, all of the pain that it also covered. And so the courage that you all had in taking part in this and bringing it to air is really amazing. And thank you for doing that for all of us to better mm-hmm. educate everyone, even though it's so difficult. Yari, you wanted to follow up there.
I do. I remember also when we were to aim our guns at the scientists, I was also concerned about that, because where I come from in the Native community, you don't point your guns or rifles at people. We don't do that. We're taught not to do that. And when I first started dating my husband, he took me to a gun shop for my birthday, and he said, well, take a look around. So I looked, and he said, well, are you going to pick a gun? I said, for what? And he said, for protection. I said, where I come from, we don't use guns on people. I will not buy a gun for protection. If you want me to protect myself, you can get me a taser. So that's what he got me, a taser.
Yeah, that's what I was taught as well, that, you know, you don't point guns at people. You point it at what you want for dinner, and that's what you use guns for. Let's quickly go to the phones for a moment. Ron is in Chickaloon. Hello.
Hi, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Perfect. Well, I enjoyed the series very much. I want to thank all your guests for their good work, and I can only imagine that nothing but good will come from turning the Justice Ladies loose on Hollywood. That's a real good development. I wanted to point out one thing about the film tax credit and why we don't have it here. And usually legislation is a team effort, but it goes right back to Senator Bill Stahl. He torpedoed that, and it's been a problem ever since. I hope some future legislature will get it together and put it back. But I have a question for you all, and it has to do with an Easter egg that I noticed in the final episode, and I had to run it back to look at it to make sure I really saw what I saw. Chief Danvers and Trooper Navarro were sitting at the Salal facility on the edge of a pool table and talking and kind of looking out the window, and on the pool table, the balls were arranged in the shape of the stars on the Alaska flag, and I'd like to know who did that, who's responsible.
Wow.
Tell him at least one viewer out here noticed and loved it and would love to know who was responsible for that.
I see a lot of surprise looks in the studio.
I would say, I'm so sorry, but we don't know. I didn't even notice that, but there are so many Easter eggs that I've seen on like YouTube videos about the show that I never would have caught. So bravo to you.
Boy,
I'm going to
no
go
kidding.
Back
Sharp
and
eyes.
Look.
Me
and,
too.
Wow, I don't know.
My wife noticed that. I think all the unsolved things, my answer is it was Annie Kay.
I like that because there was a lot of things about the unseen there. Mm-hmm. You know, the spirituality and... I really like that. I think you're right. I think it was Annie Kay.
I need to put that on a T-shirt.
That's right.
It was Annie Kay.
Annie Kay set up the pool table. All right, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion on True Detective and the Alaskans involved on Talk of Alaska. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing True Detective Night Country, the fourth season of the series of True Detective, is. All about Alaska, wasn't shot in Alaska, but features Alaska native actors, Mary Lou Asiksik, Diane Benson, Philip Blanchett, and Yari Walker, who are all in the studio or on the line with us today. And if you'd like to join us in our final minutes of the program, give us a call statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. Or in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. And also, you can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So a question that I have is, do you think that truer representation and more authentic cultural reflection, as we've been talking about in major media, can move the needle on state and national attitudes toward Native people? How much impact can a TV show really have? Who wants to take that?
Well, I would like to.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that it can have a tremendous impact because we're naturally storytellers. You know, Indigenous people were naturally storytellers, and when we tell a story, there's almost always meaning. Sometimes it's fun, you know. Sometimes it's entertaining, but and excuse me, I'm having a moment because this whole experience has been very meaningful to me as an Indigenous person and to bring light to a lot of things. So I think that's mainly what these broad audiences can do. I actually have the character that I related to most in the series was Julia, was the sister who actually later on committed suicide. And I've never seen representation so personally represent something going on in myself that brings that message to a greater audience, because Alaska Native people, you know, we have the some of the biggest statistics of different things, you know, suicide, domestic violence, violence against women and men and children, things like that. So bringing these issues and these things that have first historical trauma, came from historical trauma, became generational trauma, and now, you know, I'm the embodiment of, you know, the PTSD, and I have PTSD that comes from that. So telling Alaska Native stories and Indigenous stories through our lenses is, I think, vital. And, you know, we have these difficult stories. We also have very funny stories. Just, you know, there's a certain cadence to, you know, our humor and things like that. So I think that this platform, and we're talking about it on a radio show that Alaskans are going to hear, you know, we have, and we have like Lily Gladstone, who is just, you know, won her Golden Globe for Killers of the Flower Moon. We are starting to have, I think, a bigger voice, which for me, I am just learning to find my voice and that I have something to say. That's been very difficult for me, but just talking to you now and having everyone here, it is very important. So thank you.
Absolutely important. Thank you. Yes, thank you so much. I want to allow others a moment to weigh in here too, but while you're reflecting on what you might want to say, I'll read an email from Sylvia, who writes, "Hi there, listening to you this evening from London, England. Want to say thank you to your guests for their participation tonight. Very interesting, thought-provoking. Not enough Native actors being highlighted, especially women. I'll try to see if they'll be showing Night Country on this side of the pond." And she says, "Why am I listening? My family is from Angoon. I was trolling the internet and your station popped up, and so glad I am. I've added you to my favorites." So we've got somebody listening to us in London right now, which is fantastic. Thank you, Sylvia, for the note. Mm-hmm. Philip, does anyone want to add to Mary Lou's comments? Otherwise, I want to move on to something else with you, Philip.
No, I just think that making things, talking about things is healing. And bringing them, and makes things real, and it connects us. And I think something like this, and when we share our honesty and authenticity, people will feel it. They can choose whether they will honor it, but it makes a difference. Like Mary Lou said, it makes a difference within us as individuals when we choose to share and embrace and support each other as a community. So I think that when we share these kind of stories and on these platforms, there's no question that it makes a difference. And that, you know, I think that with the intention of like what I'm hearing here with my fellow actors, like it is way more profound than even I could have even imagined. And that it's just, it's the power of, you know, what we get to experience together, being alive and accountable for, you know, all the emotions that we are able to share. So it's just really wonderful.
And as you said, talking is healing. I was just relaying that message to someone very close to me recently who's had a trauma and said, "I know it's hard to talk, but when you're ready, that can help you take ownership over it instead of it owning you. Then you can, you know, take your power back and not let that trauma define who you are or keep tripping you up in the future."
I'd like to add quickly, going off of both of them, and I agree with everything they said. I feel like the show is helping bring awareness worldwide, not just in Alaska, you know, it's everywhere. This platform is helping us to share our stories, the reality of what happens to Indigenous women. And just like Mary Lou said, I'm a part of that generational trauma, intergenerational trauma. I just recently finished writing a book about my personal journey about intergenerational trauma with child abuse, domestic violence, sexual abuse, alcoholism. And my intention is to bring awareness into the community and to be a voice of 1,000 women, children, people who are victims or perpetrators, even educators. This book, I want to use this book to educate people who serve Indigenous people so they can have a better understanding of how to serve us, how to build a relationship with us. So I'm nervous and I'm excited, but yeah.
Just well, Yari, like we'll certainly have to have you back to talk about your book. I wish we had another hour because I have so many questions left. But I want to end on, in our last couple of minutes here, Philip, you've been involved in the production of Molly of Denali. The theme music is Bumiwa's music. You said you'd like to see an Alaska Native person as a showrunner. Tell folks what that position is and why it's important. And do you have an idea that you'd like to pitch right now live on Talk Alaska?
Well, I don't know if I have an idea to pitch, but I just definitely I feel personally very humbled in this production because it's really a story that is featuring, showcasing the strength of our women in the community. And I can only relate from my upbringing of being raised by women and being a mama's boy and in our community. But I'm really, the one thing that sticks with me is when Yari, you were talking about the suicides, that's how I connect. And so many of the suicides that I know from the people are men. And so there's so much, so I guess I would pitch something that is strengthening and healing our Indigenous men and showcasing a story and an avenue so that can happen, because that there's not going to be really any balance until we heal and grow together, and the justice really comes when it's healing and it's through love and through growth and so I think that showrunner is somebody who has confidence in themselves, and from our where we're from, it's from our ancestors. And having that confidence and being able to feel like you don't need permission to tell your story. You're ready to tell your story and you're open. And you're open to bring other people in and build those communities with the people that have the platform, like at HBO. And so my hope is that people like the producers, Princess Johnson and Taganak, who are producers for us, and we're so indebted to their leadership, that they will be the ones who are saying, hey, this is the story that we want to tell from our perspective as showrunners. And so that from the leadership, it's not trying to understand what Native communities would be like. It's actually then doing it and sharing it from the heart and from representing their grandma, their grandfather, a great, great namesake. Then those are real subtle things that have not really been done, but we have seen it in Reservation Dogs. We have seen it in Atanachuak.
Yes.
In Whale Rider.
Yes.
Like we have seen it in Dunn, in Atla, Spirit of the Wind. But we need to see it more,
yes.
Way more, and hopefully this is just a beginning, and yeah.
Diane, I want to give you the final word here. You've been doing this work for so many years. We got about a minute left. What do you want to see next?
Just much more, and with true stories, the good, the bad, and the ugly. In this story, it was pretty dark in a lot of ways, but it was also good versus evil. And sometimes that gets to be a complicated question about what is good and what is evil. And I like that kind of exploration, and for us to explore that more within ourselves, for tribes to use it, because entertainment is so important anymore. It's a part of everybody's lives in one form or another. And when we see ourselves represented, we really hear the story. And if we hear the story and feel valued, I think it helps lift us all, and especially if we can tell the truth, and that the truth will produce something good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And bring that out in us.
Philip?
And break silence.
I just want to say that everybody talks about Jodie Foster. It's Kaylee Reese, who I was excited to work with.
Yeah, she is a force.
She was really amazing.
Absolutely amazing. Thank you so much, all of you. Thanks to Mary Lou Asiksik, Diane Benson, Philip Blanchett, and Yari Walker, our guests today on this important discussion about authentic representation. Thanks to our engineer, Chris Hyde, our producer, Madeline Rose. On the phones, Ava White helped us out today. I'm Lori Townsend. I'm going to go fan out now and get some photos. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.